And today we are picking up again with Acts chapter 14, and where we left off last week from Acts 13, Paul and Barnabas have left Antioch in Pisidia and gone about 90 miles to Iconium, and that's where they are here. And they're initially, or they have a big multitude that they're able to speak to, and everything seems to be going well. Both Jews and Greeks are becoming Christians, but then the Jews, as they did everywhere that Paul went, started to, and it's what it says, the unbelieving, to differentiate from the believing Jews that were receptive to the kingdom, and is probably also a inference to they were becoming Christians. Then the ones that were unbelieving and enemies and deniers of Jesus as the Messiah, they came in, them being here at Iconium. And they start to raise a ruckus. And then here in the next few verses, in verse 5, they rile up even the Gentiles against Paul and Barnabas, to where they're going to try to stone them. So then they leave. And then, as we'll be getting to, then they go to Lystra. And then everything goes completely to the opposite initially. And oh, and also here in verse 3, that they are performing miracles. And but anyway, then they go to Lystra, some probably 20 miles southeast or something, another town. And there Paul heals a man who has been disabled and paralyzed from birth, and he'd never walked at all. And everyone knew that lived there. And so then they tried to worship Paul and Barnabas as gods, and even named them Zeus and Hermes. And then things really take a quick turn after that in just a few verses, about 3 verses from the time they were trying to worship them as gods, and Paul had to get that shut down as quickly as he could. And then these Jews had come from Iconium, and they stirred up the crowd, and then they did a 180. They went from trying to worship them as gods, and then the crowd went and stoned them and stoned Paul and left him for dead. So, but he was not dead, thankfully, by the grace of God. And so this is this is a very exciting, but there's a lot of adventure, and you might say even mishaps, but there's a lot of peaks and valleys in this chapter that happen. So we'll start with Acts 14, verse 3. Therefore they, and of course the they is Paul and Barnabas, and you know, we're having the they here. Things are going to change here in the next 2 chapters, either in 16 or 17, that it's going to change from the they to us. But right now, we'll remember the they, because Luke is not with Paul. And then when Luke joins them, which will be at Troas, as right before they go into Macedonia or Greece for the first time. But that's where it changes from they to us. And so, but anyway, we're still at the they, because Luke has not joined Paul, and that'll actually be on the second missionary journey. It's not going to be on this first one at all. But anyway, I thought I'd point that out for us to pay attention to, that everything he's talking about is they, because he is not with them yet. Okay, so therefore they stayed there a long time, speaking boldly in the Lord, who was bearing witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. So here God is allowing Paul and Barnabas both to be performing miracles. And Kaufman said about this, Jesus promised to confirm the word through the accompanying signs, Mark 16:20. This confirmation was being done at Iconium. Paul and Barnabas were preaching the word and confirming that this word must have come from God by performing miracles of which only God was capable. The very purpose of miracles was to confirm that the message was from God. When the New Testament was completed, the purpose for miracles ceased. It is of interest to note that each time miracles are mentioned, they are associated with apostles or persons on whom the apostles had laid hands on. Never do we hear of the Christians in these towns working miracles through their great faith. And now also here, we want to pay attention. Here, this is verse 3. And in verse 5, they're going to go, these people here at Iconium, they're here seeing the miracles that Paul and Barnabas are performing and being very receptive to the message of God's kingdom and of the Messiah. And then quickly, they are going to turn on a dime and go from that and being ready to stone Paul and Barnabas. How quickly they have forgotten that these two men are obviously from God. They're performing miracles. They're breaking the laws of nature. They're doing things that are impossible to be done unless it was done by a supreme being, the Creator. And they forget that very quickly, unfortunately, here. But some have vainly supposed that if modern Christians only had faith like the apostles, they could perform miracles of healing. But such a view does not take account of the purpose for which miracles were given in the first century. The miracles in view here were God's way of bearing witness to the word of his grace. And they were in no sense merely for the benefit of the suffering. So, whatever, we're not told what kind of miracles they were performing, but if there were any healing miracles, it was not. And this one that's about to be healed in the next town, the majority was not for the benefit of the individual being healed. It was for everyone else, and then including the individual being healed, to be able to have confidence and realize that the message that was being taught was from God, because there was no other explanation for the miracle except this was a working of the divine, of a supreme being. And so then you could have confidence that, okay, this person is working a miracle, so we can have confidence now that they are from God, and whatever message they're telling us, we better listen. Verse 4, but the multitude of the city was divided, part sided with the Jews and part with the apostles. Paul and Barnabas were not apostles in the sense that the 12 were, the term being used here in a secondary sense. The name apostle is here applied to Paul for the first time in the New Testament. The secondary meaning of apostles in the New Testament is missionaries or messengers. Now, I left it the way Kaufman wrote it here, but I disagree to that a complete statement with respect to Paul. Paul was a full-fledged apostle, as were the 12. And now we remember, there were no longer the 12 here. This being the second time of this happening, we remember back in Acts 1 when Judas had disqualified himself by betraying the Messiah. So that removed him from being able to any longer be an apostle. And then he went off and hung himself in addition. But so they were down, they no longer were 12. Now they were 11. And so Peter tells the 120 that came to assemble that now they had to get a replacement for Judas. And so then they chose Matthias by lot. There were two eligible candidates out of that 120. Now, and we remember from Acts verse 12, James had been beheaded by King Herod. And so they were back to 11 again. And now here is Paul, yeah, an apostle, even Luke is saying now, with respect to Barnabas, definitely it is the secondary definition with Barnabas that he was a missionary or a messenger. But with Paul also, in addition to that here, very likely, Paul now being an apostle was a replacement for James to now get their number back to number 12. Paul, also another characteristic of the apostles are they were able to lay hands on people and give them the ability to perform miracles. And that is mentioned two times with respect to Paul in the New Testament. One is Acts chapter 19, to where there's a group of men that he laid hands on them and gave them the ability to speak languages that they had never learned. And then the second instance that it's mentioned with Paul is, let me see, it's in 2 Timothy chapter 1, I believe. But anyway, it was Paul was writing himself telling Timothy to remember the gift that was given to him through the laying on of Paul's, of Paul's hands, remember that gift that was given to you, that miraculous gift. And so those are, that confirms that Paul was not only an apostle in the secondary sense here, as Kaufman said, of being a missionary or a messenger. He was more than that. He was a full-fledged apostle. In fact, we're even going to see in Acts chapter 15 and the accompanying passages that Paul had written in 1 Corinthians, I believe, that he even is commanding Peter and straightening Peter out. And so he is is one of authority, and then the apostles listen to him. So he is equal in apostleship, and he's in the apostleship ministry with the other 11. And so it's not that Paul is only an apostle in the secondary sense of being a missionary or one sent. So I disagree there with Kaufman. On that. Any questions or comments on anything here? Okay, we'll read verses 5 through 7. And when a violent attempt was made by both the Gentiles and Jews with their rulers to abuse and stone them, they became aware of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia, and to the surrounding region, and they were preaching the gospel there. Okay. So now they just go down southeast some 20 or so miles, go to Lystra, and then Derbe is to the east, probably about 30 miles or so, and or 40. And so, and they're speaking again. So they're not missing a beat. They're just moving on. But these Jews are not far behind. But anyway, they're ahead of them a little bit. And so Kaufman said, the opposition mentioned in verse 2 could be contained only for a time. The increasing success of the gospel finally triggered the riotous and illegal action in view here. But when the apostles learned of it, they yielded ground, as Jesus had commanded, and fled to Lycaonia. The climate for the gospel preachers proved to be no better in Lycaonia than it had been in Iconium and Antioch. The pagan population was a fierce primitive breed. And now Kaufman's going to give a history about this Lycaonia territory of it being the originator of the werewolf legend. And he wrote, the very name Lycaonia is translated as wolfland. So Lycaonia means wolfland in their native language. Faithfully represent, and this, that wolfland name faithfully represented the character of the inhabitants. There was a local legend that told the name Lycaonia came from a king named Lycan who had been transformed into a wolf by Zeus. This is where the legend of the werewolf originated. It is a tribute to the gospel message that such a population as this should have responded to the truth, resulting in Paul's friend Timothy. So, and this is where Timothy and the grandmother Eunice, and this is where they live, right here at Lystra. Now, we're not going to get a mention of them here until the second missionary journey when Paul comes back around here, and then that's when Timothy comes into view and he joins Paul in that second missionary journey. And but very likely this is where Paul meets Timothy and his family is right here. And he's very likely when the group of people goes over to check on Paul and they think he's dead, but then he gets up. Very likely, Timothy and his family is in that, his mother and grandmother are in that group. But here, what Kaufman's meaning for talking about that here is, here you've got these very rough, highly volatile and aggressive people, so much so that they named their place Wolfland, and here they are quick to stone Paul even after he has healed a man that they have known is has been crippled or disabled and paralyzed from birth. And so that's how ill-tempered these people are. But even there are great benefits. And as Jesus said, the field was white unto harvest. And even a lifelong friend and worker in God's kingdom as Timothy were here in this otherwise very hostile place. It would be easy to be discouraged by such people as those who lived in this area. For the most part, they were a wild, uneducated, barbaric group of heathens dominated by idolatry and superstitions. But here were souls lost in sin. They needed a Savior, and Paul and Barnabas were ready to tell them the good news regardless of personal risk. The lesson is useful for us today. Any questions on anything here?